WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper, saying they're underpaid and overworked. Tens of thousands of Kaiser Permanente workers in several states go on strike. CBS's Jolene Kent with more.
So far, this is going to last 3 days, but there have been little developments today as to the workers getting what they want, which is a higher wage. Right now, what Kaiser is offering is between $21 and $23 an hour, and that's just over what a fast food worker will be earning here in California.
Talks have wrapped up for the day, and Kaiser Permanente says it will coordinate with coalition leaders to reconvene bargaining as soon as possible. More auto workers are laid off due to the UAW strike against the Big Three. WWJ's Tony Ortiz in Detroit.
350 workers at the Livonia Transmission Plant and 50 workers at the Sterling Axle Plant have been asked not to report to work. Company officials say the layoffs are a result of the strike at the Chicago Assembly Plant. Now, since the strike started in mid-September, about 1,300 workers in total have been laid off. Meanwhile, General Motors says about 2,200 workers at their plants have also been affected by the strike at its Lansing, Delta Township, and Missouri plants.
With Congressman Kevin McCarthy no longer Speaker of the House cannot do any business on the floor until lawmakers elect a new speaker. Congressman Steve Scalise and Jim Jordan are running for the position. CBS's Scott McFarlane heard from GOP New York Congressman Marcus Molinaro.
The leadership vacuum and overall paralysis in the House is raising new worries about crashing into the new November 17th deadline to fund the government and avert a government shutdown.
The lights are off, the doors are locked indefinitely. What should folks make of that?
Yeah, they should be very concerned. I mean, the average American should be very concerned.
We need to change the poisonous atmosphere in Washington.
President Biden unveils the latest stage of his student loan debt relief program.
The president has long promised to do something about student loan debt, and despite a setback by the Supreme Court, he says he remains committed to that goal.
My administration has approved an additional $9 billion relief for 125,000 borrowers.
This is just the latest in a series of programs administered through the Department of Education not affected by the court's ruling.
In total, my administration has canceled $127 billion in student debts for nearly 3.6 million Americans.
Which Mr. Biden calls life-changing for borrowers and good for the economy. Linda Kenyon, CBS News, the White House.
The Roman Catholic Church is holding a formal meeting that's likely to address sensitive topics, CBS's Chris Liv say in Rome.
They're also set to talk about whether priests can get married and also as to whether or not Catholics who have been divorced and remarried, whether or not they can receive communion. So there's a long list of controversial topics here.
This is CBS News.
You need to hire? Indeed is with you every step of the way. Helping you attract, interview, and hire candidates all from one place. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
With news on WAUK The Shaw, I'm Stuart J. Waddles. There will be visuals to go along with the Waukesha water transition. The changeover to Lake Michigan water starts Monday, and the Waukesha Water Utility says within the first 5 days, 90% of the customers will have received Lake Michigan water. If you live on a dead end, cul-de-sac, or a court, it could take 3 to 4 weeks before you get the water. Starting Monday, an interactive map on the city's website will show where the water has been changed. UW-Milwaukee has introduced the Tuition Promise Program, following in the footsteps of other University of Wisconsin campuses. It covers up to 4 years of tuition costs for students from families earning less than $62,000 annually. Around 1,500 students are expected to enroll in the program starting in the next academic year. With news on WAUK The Shaw, I'm Stuart J. Waddles.
Red Delicious, Honeycrisp, Granny Smith. If you have a favorite apple, now is the time to pick it straight from the source. Did you know Wisconsin has more than 300 apple orchards? Travel Wisconsin recently naming its favorites, including the Oneida National Apple Orchard outside Green Bay, Ferguson's Orchards in Eau Claire, and Apple Holler south of Racine. Many provide tons of family fun in the fall, too. Tire swings, lawn bowling, hay rides, and more. Apple experts suggest if you want to pick yours fresh, do it before the end of October. For Civic Media, I'm Terry.
People won't give you the real talk on drugs. But it's time we know the facts. Fentanyl is killing people. It's a powerful opioid, often made illegally and commonly mixed with illicit drugs. It can even be pressed into counterfeit pills that resemble prescription medications. Just 2 milligrams, about the size of a few grains of sand, can potentially be lethal. This isn't an ad to scare you, but it is an ad to make you think twice. Get the facts. Go to realdealonfentanyl.com. This message is brought to you by the Ad Council.
If I could be you,
and you could be me,
for just 1 hour,
if you could find a way
to get inside
each other's mind,
walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
We've all felt left out. And for some, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Civic Media radio stations providing your news, conversations, and fun you won't find anywhere else.
Think Tank approved corporate news and commentary? Are you tired of CEOs telling you what to think, who to hate, and who to vote for? Well, welcome to the Rick Smith Show. We don't take orders from some boardroom, and we don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to. Lots to talk about. Day one of no speaker vacation. Evidently, the children in Congress, left to their own vices, have gone and spread in all kinds of mischief and mayhem. So what did they do? What did the children do today when they had no work? Kind of like a snow day, if you will, for Congress, of their own making. You know, it's kind of like they pulled the fire alarm and now they get the benefit of it. So what did they do with 13 months away from the 2024 election? What are they going to bring to the American people? Well, what did our bow tie wearing Wall Street puppet interim speaker Patrick McHenry do today? Well, he kicked Nancy Pelosi and Steny Hoyer out of their offices. Really? That's the first club out of the bag. We're gonna go get Pelosi and Hoyer. We'll show them. And this is just the beginning. Expect more musical offices, because look, they have no agenda. And understand, they did this on purpose. They did this on purpose so the story would be, they kicked Nancy Pelosi out of her office while she's in California at Dianne Feinstein's funeral. And that's the story. Not the fact that the House is on fire. The Republican Party has set the House on fire. And they have no way of putting this fire out. Now, what you hear is, we should just calm down. You know, they're going to work through it. No, this is unprecedented. This is unprecedented. And it's who they are. So what did our children do? What did our reality stars and real nitwits of Washington, D.C. do today? Well, you had Marjorie Three Names and the rest of her kook caucus. They were doing the podcast circuit, spewing a bunch of nonsense, heard a lot of, this is the Democrats' fault. We're going, really? You're the majority. And I got to tell you, the more I watch the kook caucus, the more I watch the Republicans do their thing, the more I realize that they don't really want to govern. They don't really want to be in power because they don't have an idea of what they're doing. They don't know what they're doing. These are people who want a beauty contest. They want a popularity contest. They have no idea. They barely found the bathroom, let alone know how to legislate, know how to compromise, know how to govern. No clue. They want a popularity contest. And it shows. And what it shows is they don't want to be in they don't want to be in the majority. They want to be the minority. They want to be the bomb throwers. They want to be the guy who stands up and says, no. But we didn't ask you a question. No. I mean, that's all they want to do. They don't know anything else. And here's the thing. We pay them. This is the brilliant part. We're paying them to do nothing. You know, we used to joke about the do-nothing congresses of the past. Well, they're doing something, literally burning the house down. And, you know, kicking Pelosi and Hoyer out of their offices. And look, this happens occasionally. This kind of tit-for-tat, I'll show you kind of, I'm in charge kind of thing. It happens. Don't care about it. Not even a little bit. What I care about is there's no agenda. None whatsoever. And I love the fact that Patrick McHenry, the bow-tie-wearing interim speaker who's the puppet of Wall Street, evidently not a chance he's going to be the speaker because Representative Garrett Graves of Louisiana said, hell no! I think there's a scenario where Patrick McHenry could be this for an extended period of time. Hell no. No. So he's not going to be the guy. So who is? We've heard the name Jim Jordan thrown around. In fact, I got to be honest, I don't know why Jordan would peek his head out. Because if he's actually a serious contender for the speakership, get ready to hear all about Jim. Not J-I-M, G-Y-M. Get ready to hear about all of the exploits at Ohio State, all of the sex scandal, all of the stuff that he covered up, all of the whining and crying and all the trying to get people to turn on each other. Oh. That will be the story. So I'm not sure why Jim Jordan's throwing his name, other than he's just a power-hungry monger who was willing to step on anyone to get ahead. There's that. Then Steve Scalise. I'm not sure why Scalise wants it. He's suffering. He's fighting blood cancer. I'm like, he could be dead not too long. How about, you know, I don't know, maybe taking care of that. And then, well, then the funny thing comes in. Sean Hannity throws in, let Donald Trump be speaker. We want Donald Trump. And Marjorie Three Names goes on Alex Jones. And, yes, we want Donald Trump. He's the only one I'll vote for. And you go, I'm actually in favor of that. Please show the country that you have no idea how to govern. That you in a legislative body can't choose among you someone to lead you. That you have to go outside of the institution entirely to get a reality TV star to come in and lead this cavalcade of crazy. And what's interesting is Trump said a lot of people have called me about speaker. All I can say is we will do whatever is best for the country and other Republican Party and people. I'm not sure what that means, but not ruling it out. Again, no agenda, no idea. And what's interesting to me, the people that I talked to today, and I threw it out. I said, what do you think of Trump as speaker? It was like someone won the Super Bowl. The people that I were talking to was like, oh my God, that would be the greatest thing ever. They don't know what the speaker does or, you know what Trump would do as speaker. They just want him because they know it's going to tick off the libs. And as someone who I guess I'm fairly liberal, it doesn't tick me off at all. In fact, it would make me very happy if you did something really that stupid, that colossally stupid, because it would make the institution even less functional, if that's possible. If it is possible for the first time in history to have ousted a speaker if this isn't chaotic enough, not quite sure what is. Now, the other part of this is while they have no agenda, they're not going to have any money. Because one thing that McCarthy's vindictive. You know, he's one of those guys, he's kind of a weasel. But he was a money-raising machine. And now when you pull him out of that, who's going to fill the coffers? Who's going to fill, the campaign money? Because, McCarthy's like, you're going to need to kick around no more. Going to be interesting to see how this plays out. And again, I think the Dems are doing the right thing. Just sit back, pop some popcorn, throw your feet up, if your office isn't being taken away from you, and just watch the reality show, because truth be told, nothing was going to get done anyway. So show the American people how dysfunctional the Republican Party is and let the chips fall where they may. Now, Democrats, as I've always said, have this need almost. I don't know if it's a maternal need to save people, to take care of people, but some Democrats, they feel the need to come in and save the day. And Democratic Congressman from Minnesota, Dean Phillips, tweeted out, there's part of me that goes, I got two thoughts on this. One is he's trying to bail them out, and two is that, you know, maybe I agree with him. And here's what he tweeted. I care deeply about restoring faith in government, which is why I'll consider any speaker candidate of competency and integrity who's willing to place people and principle over politics, improve the institution of Congress, and lead America to bipartisan higher ground. Now, there's part of me going, well, you know, he's willing to, you know, he's willing to bail out the Republican Party. He's willing to save them from himself. That's what Democrats do. But then I read it a second time, and I'm going, okay, he'll consider a speaker who's competent and has integrity. Well, that rules out three quarters of the Republican Party right there. Principle over politics, I'm going to go with probably the rest of them. Improve the institution of a bunch of people who don't believe in the institution, tell you that it shouldn't do anything. And then higher ground, a bipartisan higher, that's nobody. There's literally nobody to vote for in the Republican side of the aisle that fits any of those things. So there's part of me that goes, well, you know, it is what it is. This was a nice way of politicking a little bit, throwing it out there, saying, of course I'd be willing to help. If there was this mythical, if there was a unicorn out there that could possibly do, you know, the things that I've laid out. And in that vein, I'm not going to beat him up. Now, the fact that he left Democratic leadership over Biden, you know, seeking re-election, that's just plain, I don't get, but it is what it is. Now, what we do know is while the train wreck is going on in the House and the children are running amok, James Comer, he is the House Oversight Chair, he says they're going to stick with their impeachment inquiry of Biden. He said, you know, he believes the committee could legally continue its work without having an actual speaker. He thinks they can. And this is one of those things where you go, you think you can? Again, that's right. We're in uncharted waters. Never happened before. Now, again, as I said a moment ago, the reality is Republicans are going to continue to tell us that government is broken. It's broken. We need to tear everything down. We need to start over. We need to reinvent the widget. And the reality is government is not broken. Government works just fine. It's the Republican Party that's broken. They're broken. They're the ones who have broken this. Once you take them out of the equation, once you put them back into their much cherished, much sought after minority role, things work pretty well. Because if you remember, Nancy Pelosi had a much slimmer margin than McCarthy had. And yet somehow, she became speaker, didn't agree to a whole bunch of insanity, and actually got stuff done. Shock of shock. Now, understand, and I get this, that the Republicans have some lunacy problems, that maybe the Democrats don't. But look, the Dems have some far-out folks on their side, too. It's called keeping your people in together and not agreeing to stupidity. So we're going to see what happens and where this takes us. But I got a lot to get to, a lot to talk about. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I'm going to take a quick break. Right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425. Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So the big story today, 75,000 workers hit the picket line today, healthcare workers across the country. And look, this was coming. We knew it was coming because I look at the fact that Kaiser Permanente reported in the first two quarters $4.5 billion in profit. $4.5 billion. Their CEO pocketed $15.6 million, but here you've got workers who are working for pretty close to poverty wages. And this is, again, another one of those moments of working people who have just had enough. So in Virginia and Washington, D.C., you had workers walking off the job at 6 o'clock this morning. They're going to go on strike, I guess, for one day. In California, Colorado, Washington, Oregon, they went on strike at 9 o'clock this morning. I believe they're going to be out for 3 days, if I'm not mistaken. But you've got this coalition of unions that represent some 85,000 workers at Kaiser Permanente. And they're saying, look, we've got major staffing shortages. Those major staffing shortages are leading to potential unsafe conditions. You know, someone, you know, emailed me the other day and said, you know, the number three cause of death in this country is medical errors. And I'm like, I haven't checked that, but someone sent that to me and I'm going, I don't know that to not be true based on the fact that we have a system that is set up where profit is sacrosanct, where we're squeezing the quarter till the eagle screams and, you know, working conditions be damned, staffing levels be damned. And look, you know, you end up having longer wait times. There's massive patient neglect. There's all kinds of stuff that we should be focusing on. And that's what this is about. Yeah, it's about the wages. It's about the benefits, but it's about the conditions. It's about the fact that these nurses and these workers are going, hey, we need the resources. We need the staffing levels. We need the ability to take care of people and do our jobs. They're also fighting to say, look, you know, we want to make sure that our work doesn't get outsourced and subcontracted and sliced and diced and given away. We want to have ownership of our work so that we have control of those circumstances. Because what happens is they bring in contract people who, well, you know, they can get rid of them anytime they want. Those workers don't have any voice, any say. So what these healthcare workers are saying, look, we want to have some skin in how our patients are cared for. And I've got to tell you, that's important. I say this all the time. Nurses are the greatest people in the world, with hands down, without question. I listen to the doctor sometime, but when the doctor says something, I then go to the nurse and I go, you know, is what he said right? Because they seem to know. They seem to know more because they deal with people. They seem to understand things. So I'm hoping they reach an agreement. They've been bargaining since April. The contract expired on September 30th, and they said, hey, look, at some point, we got to pull the trigger. So you're going to see a day-long strike for the workers in the Mid-Atlantic and then on the West Coast. I guess it's going to be a three-day strike. And the hope is that this is the shock to the system that makes the employer, Kaiser Permanente, a nonprofit with $4.5 billion profit in the first two quarters of this year, say, hey, you know, maybe we do need to do some things to make care better, to make working conditions better, to make pay and benefit better. Also, one of the things they're also talking about is retiree health care. This is another one of these things that I'm glad to see back. We had fought for it for a while, a couple of generations ago. Something I think needs to be fought for again. Because I don't know that we're ever getting to national health care. But maybe this is how we get there to ensure that cradle to grave people are taken care of. But just my thoughts. Let's go to the phones. We've got Alice on line one. Alice, how are you?
Totally insane. So I was talking to a MAGA Republican today. And they brought up to me about... it was a neighbor. So they brought up to me that, you know, about McCarthy being removed. And I thought, oh joy, here we go. And I said, well, you know, I said, there's some crazy lunatics that you've got in the Republican Party. And unfortunately, that minority there is causing you all kind of problems. And they actually agreed with me, and I thought I was going to faint. And then they said, well, I'll tell you one thing. At least you Democrats aren't arguing with each other. And I just hurried up and changed the subject. But I thought, oh, wow, some of the MAGA Republicans are taking note now.
There's common ground.
But I think they, yeah. So I also seen in the Washington Post where they were saying Matt Gaetz wants to be Speaker of the House. And I thought I was going to fall on the floor from laughing so hard.
Yeah, well, we'll see.
I thought, oh, yeah. Let's get him in there,
I'm
right?
I'm all in favor of it. No, let's bring on the crazy. Bring Trump. Maybe you can have a co-thing. Maybe Gaetz and Trump. You know, maybe co-speakers. Because, look, they're not going to get anything done. They don't have an agenda. They don't have policy initiatives that are passable. They've got hardline insanity that is never going to pass. They've got messaging bills that are all about cruelty and hatred. They're getting exactly what they deserve.
Well, that's true, but I think they do have an agenda, Rick. And the agenda that they have is to cause as much chaos and destruction and misery as they can.
Yeah,
well, I think that is their agenda.
Mission accomplished.
Exactly. But have a good evening.
Thanks, Alice. Appreciate it. No, I'm coming around to the reality that Republicans don't want to be in the majority, or at least the House Republicans. Because look, you know, I've known a lot of people who've been in Congress, and to do it right, to actually do the job, it's a lot of work, and it's not glamorous. It's not, you know, it's not all, you know, TV interviews and pats on the back and ribbon cuttings. It's a lot of research. It's a lot of reading. These bills are not short. And I know you had the Herman Cains of the world. You know, every piece of legislation I pass is going to be 2 pages long so that you can read it at the dinner table. You go, yeah, you're going to, 2 pages, huh? You think you're going to be able to do, yeah, I'm going to do healthcare reform in 2 pages. Yeah. Again, shows how little they understand on what it takes to govern. This is one of those places where I want smart people. I want smart people who are going to do good things and want to do good things. This is the part that's just remarkable to me. You have, you know, you can go through the list of the Republicans who are usually on the podcast circuit or on the F channel or any of the other right-wing cable outlets. It's all about, hey, look at me. It's all about how can I get that next gig? It's not about making your life better. It's not about making the lives of working people better. And this is where, you know, I've said this before, this is my true north. How do we make the person who gets up every day, punches that clock, does what's asked of them? How do we make their lives better? How do we get more money into their paychecks? How do we get better health and retirement security into their lives, better education for their children? How do we do, you know, go down the list, better infrastructure so it doesn't take them so long to get to work, you know, maybe public transit. There are 1,000 things we could be doing, but we're not. You know what we're doing? We're throwing Nancy Pelosi out of her office. Because that's the best they could come up with. That's it. I mean, wow. I mean, if you really wanted to play the reality TV game, couldn't you come up with something more creative? And the answer is no, because it's not about that. It's about dysfunction. And I hope the American people in 13 months go to the polls and throw these people into the minority. I'd love to see all of them go because they're not serious legislators. These are not serious people who care about the American people. They're not. These are people. These are chaos merchants. These are outrage merchants. But Rick, it's not all of them. You know, I used to believe you're right. It's not all of them. But the fact that there doesn't seem to be any room for movement. The fact that they have no ideas and no will to make lives better. I'm just not there anymore. They've lost me on that. You know, it's not all of them. You're now guilty by association. As my mother always said, you're judged by the friends you hang out with. You know, those bums you hang out with that were causing trouble. Well, you're one of them. Well, you got that R behind your name. You're one of them. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. Quick break. Right back after this. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1936. That was the day Londoners referred to as the Battle of Cable Street. By some accounts, as many as 250,000 trade unionists, radicals, and anti-fascist fighters joined together to protest Sir Oswald Mosley's British Union of Fascists. The fascists planned to march in black shirt uniform through London's then heavily Irish and Jewish working class East End neighborhood. Mosley's BUF scapegoated Jews for the economic crisis brought on by the Great Depression. He had drawn thousands to rallies in previous years, and now looked to impose fascist dominance over the most vulnerable of Londoners. Bill Fishman, a Jewish activist and son of an immigrant tailor who was there on that day, recollected, quote, "I was moved to see the bearded Jews and Irish Catholic dockers standing up to stop Mosley. I shall never forget that as long as I live. How working class people could get together to oppose the evil of fascism." The Metropolitan Police stationed as many as 10,000 policemen to keep counter-protesters from directly confronting the BUF. But the anti-fascists physically blocked every possible path into the East End. They constructed barricades along Cable Street made from paving stones and household furniture. Women emptied garbage bags and chamber pots from windows onto the fascists. Marbles were thrown in the direction of the fascists and their protectors. Seamen pulled out their lorries and turned them on their side. Tram drivers parked and abandoned their streetcars in the middle of the street to prevent the fascists from continuing their march. Protesters chanted the slogan of the Spanish Civil War, "No pasarán," or "They shall not pass." And that day, the fascists did not pass. They were stopped by the power of working people.
In the mid-1800s, a new political party flared up in America, posing as an alternative to both the Democratic and Republican parties. Xenophobic and nativist, it was extremely secretive about its specific structure, motive, and agenda. Indeed, members were instructed to say, "I know nothing," when asked about details. Thus, it was quickly dubbed the Know Nothing Party. In 1856, it nominated Millard Fillmore as its presidential nominee, but he was reticent to talk about the party and even unwilling to proclaim that he was a member. He lost, and the Know-Nothing soon withered. But now, here comes another alternative party with secretive motives and backers. Labeling themselves No Labels, this group ought to be named the Nothing Party, for it offers nothing of substance to voters. Its so-called common-sense agenda is fluffier than cotton candy, yet is trying to run a third-party candidate in next year's presidential race. Why? Follow the money. That's not easy to do, though, for this gaggle of conservative corporatists slyly incorporated as a nonprofit social welfare outfit, a deceit that lets it hide the names of its political funders from the public. The New Republic, however, got records revealing that No Labels is a fat cat front, with Texas billionaire Republican Harlan Crow leading the way. Who? Crow is the political patron who has secretly been lavishing luxury gifts and cash on Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas, who in turn has embraced Crow's plutocratic positions in court cases. This is Jim Hightower saying that same plutocratic agenda appears to be fueling No Labels' third-party presidential push. For these rich politicos know that a milquetoast spoiler candidate would most likely draw independent moderates from Joe Biden, giving Crow and company another GOP corporate presidency. It's a cynical game, but that's how they play it.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, tweet of the day, comes from Rick Wilson. The Rick Wilson said, stop asking if 1930s Germany can happen here. It's happening here. And look, he's absolutely right. And it's been happening for a while. Not surprising. And I blame our media. I've been saying this for a long time. I know it's easy, cheap shot, but I blame our corporate controlled media for, you know, doing this whole both sides thingism, always being, well, you know, we've got to tell the other side. For instance, Washington Post, we talked about this yesterday, still reporting that the fraud trial, still reporting that it's alleged. No, the judge said he's guilty of fraud. That's the reality. There was a summary judgment. The bench trial, it happened. It's no longer alleged. Stop. Anyway, here to share some thoughts on the both sides-ism. And are we living? Is it happening? Is 1930s Germany happening right before our very eyes? That's why I've asked my good friend Will Bunch to come talk with us. Will is a national columnist over at the Philadelphia Inquirer. He's also the author of the fabulous book, After the Ivory Tower Falls, How College Broke the American Dream and Blew Up Our Politics and How to Fix It. Will, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, Rick. Hey, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
So this frame, people have been talking about for a little bit about this both sidesism. You've got the Republicans saying, you know, one thing, you got Democrats saying another. One side's telling something close to reality. One just kind of making stuff up, not even close to reality, but yet got to report them as their equal.
Yeah. I mean, we saw a crazy example of that just in the last couple of days with this total meltdown that's happening up on Capitol Hill, right? And, you get these mainstream papers like the Washington Post and the New York Times writing pieces that basically say, you know, why is Congress so dysfunctional? Or, you know, why can't Congress pass a budget bill? Or, McCarthy gets ousted and it's like, Congress is totally broken. It's like, no, I mean, Congress isn't broken. I mean, the Democrats in Congress seem to be doing just fine. It's one party that's totally broken.
Yep.
And you know, all these things that we're talking about, they're also interrelated. You know, this dysfunctional Congress, which is totally the fault of Republicans, that's one of the things that's enabling this brand of fascism that we're seeing now, because they want to gin up cynicism, right? They want voters to think the system is so badly broken that, you know, that only a strong man can fix it.
Yeah.
That, democracy, you know, this is what they say, that look, democracy is not working anymore. So we need to try something else.
Will, I've been saying for years, Republicans run on government shouldn't do anything, can't do anything, government's broken. And then when they get in there, they set out to break it. Now they've just completely broken it. I think they've gone a bit too far in breaking things to where I'm hoping, and maybe you'll agree or disagree, I'm hoping the American people are paying attention, because we are absolutely in uncharted waters right now. This has not happened before in our country, and a lot of firsts seem to be happening with Republican leadership right now, and I'm hoping voters are paying attention, because we're 13 months away from the next election.
Yeah, you know, I'm actually working on a column right now. It's not going to be published until tomorrow, unfortunately, but it really touches on a lot of the things that we're talking about here, and this is fascinating, and so far, only The Guardian, which not enough Americans probably read, it's a very good publication, but only The Guardian has done a story about this. But, you know, these far-right think tanks, I know that's kind of an oxymoron to talk about the far-right and thinking, right? But, these groups like the Claremont Institute and Hillsdale College, which are, you know, these groups that have been created to come up with this kind of pseudo intellectual heft behind, you know, Trumpism and the authoritarian drift of the Republican Party. They in the last like 6 months or so, you know, these pseudo intellectuals on the right have been writing pieces saying that we, America needs what they call a red Caesar, I guess red being for Republican, right? A Caesar, you know, that like in ancient Rome, you know, to argue that democracy is not working and we need somebody to come in and assume dictatorial powers, you know. And it's like, oh, just, you know, just temporarily, just to, you know, just to get the Marxists or whatever they're calling people these days out of the deep state, you know, just to break down the influence of all these liberals who've taken over these agencies and these systems, you know. And that's their plan, you yeah. know. I mean, they have this blueprint called Project 2025. I don't know if you guys have talked about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, the Heritage Foundation. On this show.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, it's basically to, you know, and civil service.
It's to bring back patronage, is what it is.
Yeah, yeah, and put Trumpists in every, you know, over EPA and the NLRB and any other important agency that you can think of, but destroy them. You know, it's one thing. You know, this isn't Ronald Reagan putting, Gorsuch's mom in the EPA and siding with polluters. This is destroying the EPA. This is like breaking these agencies beyond recognition.
But here's the thing, and we've talked about this, you know, over the last several years. You know, right now, ALEC is celebrating its 50th anniversary. None of this stuff is new. The Heritage Foundation is over 50 years old. They created this massive state policy network of think tanks or, you know, stink tanks or whatever you want to call them. In every state, they've got chaos merchants coming up with their own alternative reality, their own alternative facts. And as I've been saying here, Republicans right now are lying differently. They're lying much differently than past generations because they're creating their own reality out of these groups that you're talking about. All of these state policy networks, all of the folks that you talked about, they're creating out of whole cloth. They're just pulling stuff out of, you know, out of whichever orifice they can grab it out of. And that now becomes the talking point. Whereas in the past, at least there were decent, honest people on that side of the aisle who said, no, that's too far. Now it seems like they're all on board.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Mitt Romney, who is the last of arguably of one of those type people, is, you know, it's like he's had enough. I mean, the last few people who maybe, you know, I mean, John McCain is long gone. And I'm not huge fans of those people and their politics, but at least you're right. At least there was a level of honesty. You know, I think it's interesting. I was thinking when you were saying about how a lot of these practices have been going on for some time, and it's just like it seems like it's getting worse. I mean, you know, I think you're right. And I think what's happened, though, is I think that, you know, starting, you know, going back to the 60s, you know, when the culture wars really kicked off and also, you know, when you had the Voting Rights Act and the yeah. Civil Rights Act, and you had, you know, you had Title IX empowering women, right? You know, you had all of these things. And, you know, the initial reaction is, we can beat this through politics, right? You know, they had Ronald Reagan, who was a master politician, and, you know, and they were able to win elections. You know, they won the 88 election with the Willie Horton ad and these other scare tactics against Black people. And it was ugly and it was horrible, but they could win elections. And as you know, I mean, since 1988, you know, Republicans have lost the popular vote in seven out of the last eight presidential elections.
Because their policies are bad. This is important. Their policies are horrible. The American people realize that their pro-corporate, pro-rich people, you know, anti-worker agenda is horrible for the mass of the people. So, yes, they're going to lose the popular vote, which is why they've had to go full on, you know, alternative reality, alternative facts, fear, scare, and shame people.
Yeah, I mean, what this movement is, what conservatism in this country is all about is preserving the hierarchies, right? Preserving the hierarchy of, you know, white supremacy or white privilege or whatever you want to call it, you know, preserving the patriarchy, you know, where men are dominant. And they're going to do that, to borrow a phrase of Malcolm X, they're going to do that by any means necessary, right? And if elections can't do it, they're going to find some other way. And, you know, I mean, they went from, you know, winning elections with, you know, Willie Horton type ads to, you know, voter suppression, voter ID laws, things to suppress the vote. And now even that's not enough. So that's why, you know, you see if we can somehow get, you know, if we can somehow get Trump in there in 2025, we're just going to throw it all out. We're just going to make him become a Red Caesar, you know, have him seize, you know, they won't call it dictatorial powers. I don't know what they're going to call it, but that's what it's going to be. It's going to be dictatorial powers. You know, and just real quickly, I mean, this is why what we were initially talking about, what you were initially talking about, the both sides problem in the media, this is why that is so important, because that reality is not coming across to the average voter, I don't think.
No, because
it's coming across to some people. I mean, there's more, you know, like that Rick Wilson tweet that you quoted at the beginning. Yeah, I mean, you're hearing more discourse like that, right? You're hearing more people saying, no, this is really like 1930s fascism was in Europe, you know? Well,
what I was going to say is, you know, you have this want of authoritarianism by folks on the right. You know, I look at that story coming out of Staten Island of all those people in Staten Island, you know, doing all kinds of outrageous stuff to people who have been moved there from Texas or Florida or wherever, you know, playing music at all hours of the night, harassing the refugees and all of this stuff, just being horrible human beings.
It's horrible. You know, I've just noticed. I've just seen really recently, like in the last few months, just a huge uptick in this type of behavior. And let me give you another example. You know, we had a guy who was a freelance journalist and kind of an activist here in Philadelphia, a guy named Josh Kruger, who was formerly homeless, overcame drug addiction. And he wrote about these issues, and he was a real kind of civic asset. And, you know, he was murdered this week. And, you know, a lot of us who knew him, I mean, I knew him on social media mainly, but those of us who knew him, you know, posted, you know, were shocked, what a loss. And these posts on social media were flooded with haters saying, good riddance, you know, one less journalist, thank God this guy was killed. And that happened, apparently a liberal activist was murdered in a street crime up in New York City a few days ago, and the same thing happened, where you've got these like swarms of online fascists, basically, maybe some of them are coming from Russia or somewhere else. Maybe they're not even all Americans, but, you know, and the Staten Island thing, I was just reading about that today. It's another side of that same coin. It's just this ugliness out there. And
I've been saying for a while, social media has allowed people to be the worst versions of themselves. And I think Trump and the Republican Party have, you know, because online is one thing, but out in public is another, and dealing with each other is another. And I think Trump and the Republican Party have given people I'm not going to say the permission, but have allowed the idea that you can be the worst version of yourself, not just online, but to people's face. And this is where I fear that this hype, this tension is going to continue to rise to a point where possibly there may be violence at some point down the road.
Yeah. Well, remember when Trump first came on the scene, when he ran the first time in 2015 and 2016, and all those people at his rallies saying, you know, I love this guy, he tells it like it is. And it's like, well, no, he was just saying the racism and xenophobia and other things that they wanted to say. Yeah. And he was saying it. And at some point it's like, yeah, if he's saying it, then we can say it too, you know? And I think you've seen this devolve, you know, over the last 8 years. And,
yeah. I mean, I look at Twitter, Twitter's become a cesspool.
And Elon Musk, the owner, for whatever reason, is enabling this. And
no, I think he bought, I said the day he bought it, he has bought Twitter to destroy it. And look, there was just an article out the other day that has proved me right. He's going from the playbook that was given to him when he bought Twitter to destroy it, because you can't have a platform where people actually get news and information. And I'm sure you saw today that they're ending the headlines on articles that are being shared, because I guess they don't ever want you to leave that cesspool of a platform.
Yeah, which, you know, takes away one of the original things that people really liked about Twitter back in the pre-Elon Musk era, which was, you know, going on there to find out what was going on. People would post links to articles that you hadn't seen. And, you know, it still works sometime. That whole Red Caesar thing in The Guardian, I wouldn't have seen that if somebody hadn't linked to it on Twitter, right? So, but, you know, they're trying to take that away. And it is amazing. And it's like, you know, I mean, is it really that simple that it's just that Elon Musk is this billionaire who doesn't want to get taxed, doesn't want a government that is anti-billionaire, anti-wealth, and he's willing to, you know, he realized that Twitter was a threat to that, right? You know, if Twitter operated the way it could operate.
Yeah. Last question I've got for you, because, you know, we're in this situation. The media, I think, was a big part of getting us here. This whole both sidesism thing, and I love the one statement I saw. You know, should the media give equal weight to both sides, even when one of them is lying? And the fact that someone would even ask that question is just incredible to me. But that's kind of the world we're in. So if they got us into this, do you have any hope that they get us out?
I don't know. You know, the people who are running the big organizations, you know, the New York Times and the Washington Post, which are so influential, both have fairly recent new editors, and they both, you know, and the Wall Street Journal, I believe, also, which I think it was the editor of the Wall Street Journal who made that comment that you were just quoting. And, you know, these people are all new, and they are all wedded to the both sides philosophy. And, you know, I've been in journalism for, I lost track, well over 40 years, 42 or 43 years now. And so I know the mentality, and I understand it. And I understand where it comes from. And it was born in a different era. And, you know, when I was a young journalist, I bought into it, I applauded it. And then I saw things that actually happened in the real world, like the bogus Iraq war in 2003, for example. And I came to realize that, you know, the flaws of both sides, journalism, that it doesn't work. And the situation we're in now is, you know, a five alarm situation, because, you know, journalism and democracy are just intertwined. You know, you can't be a journalist and be neutral about democracy, because, you know, we see around the world in the more established dictatorships, you know, we see what happens to journalists. You know, we see, look at what happens
they throw
to
them
journalists.
Out of planes.
Yeah, look at Vladimir Putin's Russia, where, you know, journalists, if they're not banned, they're being tossed out of windows, right? You know, and so you can't be neutral about that. And I don't think the public is getting enough information about the anti-democratic threat that we're facing right now.
I'm right there with you.
I don't.
Will, I appreciate the time as always. Great stuff. Keep up the great work. I hope folks will check out the book, also the column. We'll get links out on social media how folks can do that. But Will, I appreciate the time.
Yeah, Rick, thanks for having me. I appreciate it as well. Good to talk to you.
Good stuff. Our good friend Will Bunch. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Gonna take a quick break. Right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. For working people. Let's talk.
Phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1918. That was the evening that a series of explosions began at the T.A. Gillespie Company near Morgan, New Jersey. The explosions would destroy the plant and 300 buildings and kill an estimated 100 people. The world was embroiled in World War I. The United States had entered the global conflict the year before. The nation's factories were churning out munitions and other supplies for the war effort. On that fateful evening at Gillespie, workers were loading shells at the sprawling complex of 700 buildings that covered more than 2,000 acres. The initial explosion was likely an accident. Regardless, the explosion was so severe that it cut water lines to that part of the plant. Without water pressure, firefighters struggled to douse the flames. A chain reaction of explosions touched off as the fire spread in the plant. Houses in the nearby town shook from the massive explosions. Windows exploded and residents fled. Residents from three towns were evacuated due to the disaster. The New York Sun described the exodus as, quote, streams of human misery, mothers and fathers, frightened children clutching still more frightened dogs, old people tottering along with all the same dazed expressions on their faces, as if they scarcely realized what had happened. When the fire was finally put out, nearly half of the plant's buildings were destroyed. It was impossible to say exactly how many workers were killed, so bad was the carnage. Two members of the U.S. Coast Guard died responding to the disaster. The disaster was then compounded when a flu epidemic swept through the residents evacuated from nearby towns. The death toll and misery from these tragic events mounted even higher.
Labor History in 2, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Again, I go back to the frame, Republicans lie differently today. You know, back in the old days, there was at least a kernel of truth. Now, well, they're just, as Kellyanne Conway said, they've got their alternative facts. You know which orifice they pulled those out of. Let's go to the phone lines. We got Steve on line one from Chicago. Steve, how are you?
Yes, I'm fine. And I wanted to chime in on the discussion you were having with the previous guest. I caught the tail end of that. And when it comes to looking at the scholarship on why societies disintegrate, we actually find that it's because of distrust in the courts, distrust in terms of lawmakers, distrust in terms of journalism. All of the institutions that you rely upon in a democracy, a functional democracy, when those cease to function, a society can disintegrate. And that's why it's essential that we have these institutions and that they are functional. And unfortunately, trust, when you ask Americans, it's at record lows when it comes to media. It's at record lows when it comes to the legislature and also the presidency. Now, obviously, Donald Trump contributed to that with regard to the executive office. Low trust in terms of the House and the Senate, well, that's been something that's been going on for a couple of decades. But now we've introduced a dangerous third element, and that is the extremely low trust that exists in the highest court in the land. Because there was a time in America when pretty much we could rely on the high court to be an objective arbiter of what goes on in our democracy. But no longer. Now the feeling among many Americans is that basically it's just another element in the lawmaking process that can be bought and sold by the wealthy. And that's a problem. Again, if we want this society to survive in terms of its function as a constitutional republic, those institutions need to be maintained and strengthened. And this idea that we can just simply sit by and watch as they deteriorate without any impact is just naive.
Yeah. What do you make of the argument that Will was making about, you know, that the right is possibly going to be pushing for a red Caesar, an authoritarian to come in and say, I can fix a Donald Trump, say, I can fix all of those problems? Because you're right. Congress is, you know, I think syphilis was more had a higher approval rating than Congress. As you said, the Supreme Court struggling, the executive branch is struggling, you know, all of this stuff. You know, what do you make of that? Do you think that's something Americans would tolerate?
Well, you know, like a lot of people, I thought, with the Cold War having come to an end, that, you know, the book, The End of History, you know, basically articulated what a lot of us thought, that, you know, okay, the last great conflict had been resolved, and that liberal Western democracy was the order of the day moving forward. And this idea of, you know, a strongman rule and the desire to see someone like a Stalin or a Hitler or other sorts of figures such as this, That was something that we had outgrown. Well, you know, the human beings are now more sophisticated. No, it turns out that we're not. There are some of us that are, but there are other people who just want to be led by the nose and are willing to listen to whomever tells them what they want to hear. And that's what Donald Trump did in 2016. He he basically told a bunch of people who didn't know any better that, yeah, I'll get you back your grandfather's coal mining job, as if somebody actually wanted that or that was possible. Hillary Clinton refused to tell me.
You're listening to The Shah.
WAUK 540 AM Jackson. W266 DR Waukesha.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.